For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best. Located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
Buccaneers fans, it is an NFC Championship edition of the Ira Kaufman podcast, something we thought we might not see ever again given Ira's advanced age, but this is the Ira Kaufman podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee Dekeper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. All the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's very first family of Ford. Legends over there, 1 mile north of Dale Mabry Highway for the last 60 years. Remember their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, BillCurryFord.com. Sage, a lot to talk about today. The Buccaneers are a game from history, two games from bringing home the entire title, making this title town in a big way. And Ira, you know, before we get cooking here, I got to just throw it out there myself. I am so impressed by the team effort, the total team effort. You know, this wasn't one guy's heroics. Deep, deep team effort by the Bucks. It lets me know that they're an excellent team right now. And redemption day for Todd Bowles. Even just that one big play by Devin White. I look at who was rushing the passer. Cam Gill, Anthony Nelson, Ndamukong Suh, Will Golston getting that just a little bit of pressure to make Drew Brees throw that pick. A little bit off target and White grabbed it. So many contributors. Unbelievable, Ira.
You hit some great points over there, Stevie. The helmet's off to Todd Bowles. He better get a job off that game, Lee. If he doesn't get a job off that game, then you can't interview for garbage over there. I loved his aggression, Lee. We've talked on this podcast so many times. Stop with the passive stuff, the soft zone, especially, Lee, especially against a guy who can't throw the ball more than 25 yards in Drew Brees. That's what makes this next matchup so compelling. It's a whole different breed you're going up against. I think the accent more is on mixing things up Sunday in Lambeau because you man up and aggress, you know, in aggressive style against Rodgers, he can burn you. I didn't think Brees could. So I think by Bowles adopting that plan and that scheme, Lee, I think he gave the young secondary confidence. Hey, coach thinks we can get the job done against Michael Thomas and Cook and Sanders and these guys and Kamara. I love that about that game plan. I thought it was the whole key to the game. Brees had nowhere to go, Lee. Every darn throw was contested with few exceptions, like the gimmick play by Winston. All right, it was a breakdown. I understand it. But by and large, Lee, the 35 balls or whatever that Brees threw, the windows that he was forced to throw into, he couldn't do it, Lee. He couldn't do it. And everybody, you know, said this was a Brady-Brees matchup. Well, it was only a Brees matchup. He was made to look really bad. Brady managed the game well, didn't turn the ball over, which, you know, he's so great at protecting the football, which is why he's a Buccaneer and why Arian said he wanted him in February and March. And he's getting that job done. But the biggest story was what the defense did against Brees, and I got to give Bowles some of the credit for that.
You know, Ira, I'm in such a good mood that the Bucs are in an NFC Championship game. As Steve says, something we, at one point, never thought we'd ever see again, the way this franchise was going. I'm in such a good mood, I'm not going to unload on Bowles for having the entire defense's head up their ass when Jameis Winston was at wide receiver and no one thought, you know, gee, he might throw the ball. No one. Sean Payton might as well have held up a sign and said Jameis is going to throw the ball. I'm not even going to bitch about that. That's how good of a mood I'm in. A year ago, if someone would have gone up to us or walked up to us and said, you know, in a year, the Bucs will be in the NFC Championship game playing the Packers, and the Bucs will have Leonard Fournette at running back, have Antonio Brown at wide receiver, have Rob Gronkowski at tight end, and have Tom Brady at quarterback, you'd have the guy committed if you didn't run away from the guy. This is just so unbelievable what's happened in the past year. And I couldn't get to sleep last night. I think I had a whole 4 hours sleep. It's catching up with me now.
There are some eerie parallels, Steve. Eerie. Very, very eerie to closing down the Vet. Now, look, they didn't close down the Superdome. The Superdome is going to be open for business in 2021. I understand that. But Steve, that game started with a special teams breakdown by the Bucs. And the next thing you knew, you know, the Eagles were up 7-0, you know, one or two snaps into the game because of the special teams breakdown. In that game, the offensive line protected Brad Johnson very well. The Bucs ran the ball decently. And, of course, the biggest parallel, the takeaways, a great play by Rondé. Rondé was a man on a mission, as was Devin White. You can't say enough about the defense, Steve. You just can't. It's not like they blitzed Breeze into oblivion. It was more the coverage. And I said it, Steve, you didn't even argue with me. That is the best game by far by the Bucs secondary in 18 years. In lo these many years, Steve, we've never seen the Bucs secondary play a game like that given the circumstances.
Devin White, and it's so rare to see this kind of thing, Devin White was the nastiest, the baddest hombre on the field yesterday, period. Playing with such energy and such physicality. And, you know, listening to the Buccaneers radio network Monday night, Ira, Jordan Whitehead, he was serious, but he said he got a good laugh that Devin White, when he was on the field, like somewhere in the first half, he screamed to the guys like in the huddle or a lot of guys, whatever it was, screamed to him, "Hey, you guys missed me." You know, just barking at him like, "You missed me, you missed me." And then apparently he was going wild all week long. Mike Edwards was on the radio network talking about that. And even Derek Brooks on your show, Tampa 2, from the Identity Tampa Bay. That's at joebucksfan.com. Derek Brooks, he almost revealed his private conversations with Devin White. He mentioned them, and then he opened the curtain for like 6 seconds, and then he pulled it back. But it was obvious that White was just going nuts being home and was so fired up for this game. But he walked the walk. And, you know, just that performance has got to be top five in Bucs history for defensive performances, in my opinion.
Well said, Steve. You know, Lee, we followed the Bucs for a long, long time. I mean, they started in 76. And Lee, through the years, even the lean years, they've had some loud mouths, especially on defense. You know, they talk a good game and they love being in front of the cameras or whatever from the Broderick Thomases, you know, right on down. And Lee, most of the time, they never backed it up, Lee. They never backed it up. And Devin White, I saw him on the Zoom call after the game. He was almost out of control, Lee. I mean, he was so fired up. And the game had been over, you know, about an hour. And he backs it up, Lee. 10 solo tackles. You know, he picked up the fumble. He picked the ball off. He was a thorn in their side all night. He led that defensive effort. And Lee, he's not all talk. He's a lot of talk, but to think, you know, what the ceiling is for this guy, Lee, he even covered well last night. And I think one of his points in the Zoom call was, "Hey, how'd you like that for you people who said I can't cover anybody?" You might have been talking about Joe Bucs fan, but, you know, for all we know. But look, you never said that Devin White wasn't going to be a good Buccaneer. You never said that. You didn't root against Devin White becoming an impactful player. But you got to say, Lee, they made a hell of a pick with that number five spot.
I can't argue because I didn't say he was going to be a bad player. Whatever he tapped into Sunday night, I hope he brings with him to Green Bay because he was absolutely on a mission. I never saw the guy play like that before. You know, I've seen him have really good games, but you know, he was like a Tasmanian devil, like on the Bugs Bunny cartoons. Oh yep. Yeah, hope he brings that again. I really do, because they're going to need it at Green Bay. We've got plenty of time to talk about Green Bay. Just as Bruce Arians and others had said, this was a different Bucs team. I kind of get the feeling this is a different Packers team.
That's a good point, Lee. You know, Steve, a lot of people focused on the Winfield jarring hit, and that was the play of the game. I don't question that. It was. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but I think, like, a minute before that, they flashed over to the Bucs sideline. Now, the Saints were winning by 7 points, and they were approaching midfield, and they showed the Bucs sideline. It was dead. Steve, there was no juice going on. Nothing. People were hanging their heads, and that's exactly the moment where you say, somebody's got to make a play. Somebody's got to make a play. But my other point, Steve, and I put it in my column Sunday night, and I might have surprised you, but nobody was talking about the Tyler Johnson catch. First of all, it was a fantastic catch. And it came on third down. They were going to have to punt the ball from their own 20. And the game was tied, I believe, at that point. And who knows what the heck's going to happen if that happens. And they end up, on that drive, I believe that was the go-ahead field goal. Steve, what a play by Tyler Johnson.
Tremendous play. I believe it was third and 11. And just a sick catch. And it's interesting. Tonight, also again on Arians radio show, he was talking about how much Tyler Johnson reminds him of Chris Godwin. And while, Godwin hasn't played his best football the last couple of weeks, he's still a star player. Nobody's advocating getting rid of Chris Godwin, but it makes you wonder how they might approach Godwin, depending on how much they really believe in Johnson, who had some excellent blocks in that game as well. How deep is the talent on this team? And that's what I started saying, Ira. Full team win. We're talking about Scotty Miller gets one ball thrown to him, and it's the biggest play of the game, 29 yards, and he just tracks the ball like a superstar as far as his tracking ability, and just all these guys contributing. Craziness, Ira. And speaking of craziness, Ira, Big Storm Brewing Company, the tap rooms in Odessa and Clearwater. What amazing places to watch the Buccaneers games. A-plus food. We don't talk about their food enough. We used to, but just extraordinary. They had a special of Cuban sliders the other day during the weekend, and wow. But Big Storm is all about the beer, Florida's very best craft beer. BigStormBrewery.com is the website. And right there in Clearwater, tremendous place to watch the game, indoors and outdoors, fully covered outdoors if you want spacing and open air. It's brand new, so beautiful setup, great sound system, BigStormBrewery.com. And Ira, you talked about craziness. Well, even more crazy than the fun at Big Storm is how incredibly well Florida's Elite Restoration tackles mold and any disaster in your home. They're there 24/7 for you to call. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Find out all about them there. You can contact them through there. You have their phone numbers there, and they will respond extremely quickly 24/7. They'll even come out to you for a full free assessment of what's happening in your home in the face of a disaster. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Bookmark that. So if anything happens, you come home and you got a leak, you discover something in your garage, whatever it might be, you have to act quickly. Florida's Elite Restoration.com.
Lee, here's a point that I think goes unnoticed a lot, Lee, but maybe we've been a little bit unfair to Jason Light in the last couple of years, 3-4 years, Lee, because the team, was going 5-11. Some of these young draft picks weren't working out particularly well, especially in the secondary. And Lee, we hinted at it, but we didn't know it for a fact, but maybe part of it was bad coaching. And now Arians has a heck of a staff, and look what they've done with Tristan Wirfs. Look what they've done with Ronald Jones. Godwin just keeps getting better and better. Lee, that could be a big part of this renaissance of Jason Light as an executive.
First off, Godwin, he was good as a rookie. So
he was good. He was good.
It was Sean Sullivan, the general manager, Bill Curry, for it. By the way, I think Sean likes being called the GM. I just get a hunch that Sean likes being called the GM. Anyway, it was Sean Sullivan I was telling. I said, how refreshing is it that you're seeing young talent developed? I like Dirk, but his coaching staff left something to be desired, his assistants, outside of Todd Monken. And I think the most glaring example is a guy that plays every game on a playoff team as a backup, but he plays every game. He backs up Derrick Henry, is Snoop Dogg with playbook.
We got to be fair to Light. We do. I don't know many teams that had a better 1-2 punch this year than Wirfs and Winfield. That's a heck of a tandem.
No, the draft class was excellent this year. Not this past game, but the previous two games, they started getting some inside pass rush and a couple of small plays from Khalil Davis, the late pick from Nebraska, the defensive tackle. Tyler Johnson contributing. Keyshawn Vaughn. Yeah, he had a fumble, but he did at least a few good things this year. It's not like he had a bust of a season. So it's a hell of a draft class. I saw something last week where it was ranked the second best in the league last year. But Ira, I do have to pull in the Light love a little bit. Got to dial it back a little bit. The secondary completely fell apart just a week ago, and there are some holes and some issues back there. and they've had their ups and downs. And until this game, this fantastic game against the Saints, I could have made the case that the Bucs secondary was better when it walked off the field in 2019 than it was when it walked off the field at the end of the 2020 regular season. So there's room for improvement there. But like I said before the game, I thought the Bucs would win because I thought at least the talent is there. At least they've got guys who can make plays. And for Sean Murphy Bunting, for all of his mistakes, he's now sitting on back-to-back interceptions in playoff games. Only Rondé Barber has ever accomplished that as a Buccaneers cornerback.
And Lee, my forte on these podcasts is you got to sprinkle some love for Brady's protectors. They're doing a hell of a job, Lee. They're doing a hell of a job. And the Saints got a good defensive line. We know about Washington's defensive line, Lee. I mean, that's two really good efforts back-to-back. They blocked well for the run yesterday, whether it was Fournette, whether it was Jones. They ran successfully. Brady's got time. Wirfs is unbelievable. I mean, look what he's doing to Cam Jordan. Lee, the guy's one of the five best defensive ends in football over the last 5 or 6 years. He's manhandled them. Even our man Donovan Smith stepped up. Lee Marpet had a good night. We didn't hear anything about Aaron Stinney, which is a heck of a credit.
Yeah, kind of a penalty. You're right, yeah.
We remember 2002, Lee, the Buck offensive line was considered the weak link. Kenyatta Walker, you know, a bunch of no names, but they played very well down the stretch in the postseason. They played very, very well in protecting Brad Johnson and running the football. And this team's doing the same thing, Lee. The offense, Joe Gilbert's done a very good job with this line.
When they won the Super Bowl, I'm just going off the top of my head here. Didn't they go out and get a couple guys from Minnesota that were Pro Bowlers?
Well, man, he was at the end of his career.
But still, I mean, Jeff Christie.
They had Jeff Christie. Roman Oben, Steve. Remember Roman Oben? He was on fumes, but I'm telling you, in that postseason run, 49ers, Eagles, Raiders, they played exceptionally well for Bill Muir. You know, he kicked them into gear. And Steve, we're seeing the same thing happen. You know, Green Bay's defense is good, but I think the strength of the Packers' defense, Steve, I think is the secondary. They got three or four good cornerbacks over there. Most teams are lucky if they have two. But they don't have a furious pass rush, in my mind, Steve.
When you're talking about manhandling, I think the manhandling, Christian Wirfs is so darn good, we're expecting him to do well. I can't say that he manhandled Cam Jordan, and this is why. You want to talk about manhandling. When Donovan Smith owns the guy so much that he's not even on the statue, he had nothing. Hendrickson, he had nothing.
Didn't make the sheet.
He had nothing. I don't think I've ever seen that before. A guy that had 13 sacks, nothing. It was like he never played. Donovan Smith, he raised him, and that's what I call dominating. Not knocking Trisky Wirfs, don't get me wrong, but when a guy with 13 and a half sacks is so owned that he doesn't have one statistic whatsoever, that's manhandling.
Ira, right now, you can get $14,157 in savings on a new 2020 Ford Explorer XLT at Bill Curry Ford. So many great deals. It's a new year, and there are new deals on all these 2020s that have to go. And between the Bill Curry discounts and Ford rebates, the inventory is incredible right now. You want to get shopping at BillCurryFord.com. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, there are even deals on beautiful Ford Escapes, the luxury kind that you love so much and that you drive around with great pride. Cosmo gets a little blanky in the back and you cruise around in that cherry red Ford Escape. But in all seriousness, as Lee said, GM Sean Sullivan at Bill Curry Ford is ready to help everybody personally and give them a Joe Bucks fan discount. His email address, you can even email him anytime with a question about anything right there at BillCurryFord.com. You can click on About Us. You can find Sean, and there you go. So we love Bill Curry Ford, and we appreciate their support of the podcast. Sage, I got to bring you back to the defense. I look at that defense, and it really was just a huge turnaround for Bowles. Now, I don't know if a guy gets a job off one game, but the aggressiveness was clearly a shift. I mean, they just decided, we're going all in. We're going to be, you know, one half a step from guys at the line of scrimmage instead of 9 yards. And it was a beautiful thing. Carlton Davis fought through a little injury there. And, you know, the growth there, I think there's so much confidence. And when you build on top of the confidence of already shutting down Aaron Rodgers this year, I think that confidence is going to go a long way to, yeah, you know, if they make some mistakes against the Packers, they'll still have enough in them, you know, to be strong and to bounce back.
It was a beautiful thing to see, Steve, for 60 minutes. With all due respect to Lee's gimmick play, and you're right, that was a communication breakdown. Shouldn't have happened, but it's one snap.
There's nothing to communicate. Winston's one wide receiver. He's probably going to throw the ball.
it was wonderful, but I think this is a much more challenging affair for Todd Bowles in terms of a secondary, because nobody throws a nicer ball than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, nobody. I don't care if it's Mahomes. And he throws it from all angles, deep, short. And Breeze can't do that. Breeze can't do that. So, Lee, we'll get into that more when we bore in on the second podcast of the week. But for one night, Lee, the Bucs secondary was fantastic. And, Lee, we got to say, Vamonte David and Devin White, who's not known for his coverage, they were also outstanding in pass coverage. We expected from Levante. So it was great to see White stepping up his game in that regard. You know, if that becomes commonplace, you're not going to be able to keep this guy out of the Pro Bowl. You're just not.
You know, a moment ago, I talked about dominating and owning and manhandling. Just in case some of your listeners, Ira, this got past them in the past 24 hours or so. Here's Michael Thomas's stats. 0 touchdowns. 0 yards, 0 catches, 4 targets. Thank you, Carlton Davis. That's another way you erase a guy off the field. Michael Thomas, he might as well have been sitting in the French Quarter at some bar watching the game.
That leads me to a big point, Steve, that I think's worth mentioning to Buck Nation. And they're going to love it, Steve.
Ira, does it have to do with mold?
this is not a Homer observation.
Well, Michael Thomas sure was moldy yesterday, I'll say that.
Steve, if Breeze retires, which I think he will, and I think there's a problem with Michael Thomas. He had an in-season issue with Sean Payton. He gave him nothing all season. He was hurt. The guy caught 1 touchdown. He was the offensive player of the year in 2019. That's a heck of an honor. And he was a zero. He was a bust in 2020. That's a problem for the Saints going forward. Breeze won't be under center, in my opinion. Who knows what they're doing with Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston.
Taysom Hill.
Steve, it's still unclear. I would think, and there's no reason to think Brady won't be back, no matter what happens Sunday at Lambeau. I think the Bucs will be solid favorites, gentlemen, to win the NFC South next season.
We'll see what happens next season. A lot can change there. I don't know if I agree with you with Thomas, Ira, only because he came back from injury and he had sort of one game to get back into the swing of things. And I remember watching him exploded against Atlanta in his next game, a 100-yard game. And then he had like 5 good games in a row before the Bucs shut him out. So I don't know if I can go there that he did nothing. You know, he had some good games late in the season.
He caught 1 touchdown, Steve.
I understand. Yeah, that part of that's the way they play in the red zone, you know, between Taysom Hill and so many options that they have. I get it. He wasn't the same Michael Thomas. You know, I don't think they're worried about him or that they're going to trade him or they're worried about his ability. You know, and this is what happens with these elite receivers sometimes. The Bucs had a lot of double coverage on Michael Thomas. And look at Mike Evans, double covered all game, 1 pass for 3 yards. He had a better body of work this season, but the Saints are still talented.
Lee, what'd you think of Brady? You said he was a game manager? Did he miss some passes? What'd you think of Brady?
This is where Steve and I disagree. I was very disappointed in the offense. I was very disappointed. To me, it looked like, for reasons that make no sense to me, Leftwich decided to dial the clock back to the pre-bye week part of the schedule.
Right.
They ran the ball all the time on first down. They never tried any play action. They rarely tried any pre-snap motion. And it looked like the same offense we saw against the Giants, against the Bears. It was like I was scared to death. I'm like, what is going on? Why don't they throw some passes on first down? Why don't they use some play action? Why don't they use him pre-snap? Not that, you know, I love Bruce Arians' answer when someone got on him about no pre-snap motion. Like, well, we're leading the league in scoring. What am I supposed to do? Fair point. And I like that answer. But you could tell when the offense was humming like no other, they were utilizing those three elements. Throw on first down, play action, and pre-snap. And why they got away from all of that, I thought they were setting themselves up to get hammered. Like, what are you doing? Are you playing right into the Saints' hands? You need, how many times, by the way, last week I say they're going the first one in 40. It's going to be a scoring spree. It's going to be a shootout. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Now, obviously, everything worked, but I was very disappointed in the offense. I don't know if that's the same offense that comes out in Green Bay. God help us all Bucs fans. And I don't want to see that again. Go back to what you were doing so well. It made no sense to me.
So, Steve, two quick points. One, to refute Lee a little bit, they were very good on third down, Steve. 8 for 17, outstanding. But to make Lee's point and reinforce it, Steve, their touchdowns came on short fields. I mean, they had great field position all night long. So Lee's right. I mean, it wasn't like they were driving 80 yards on these marches. Maybe some of it had to do with the kind of defense the Saints were playing. Steve, they were playing more coverage and inviting the Bucs to run the ball, which they did successfully. I thought the offense was okay, but Steve, it certainly was it was a step down from what we had seen the previous 5 weeks.
By the way, it looked like to me Brady was really forcing passes to Gronkowski.
Thought Gronk could have caught one or two of those. I think he led him a little bit too far. The rhythm seems to be a little bit off between him and Gronk right now.
Yeah, going back and watching the game again, you know, the first two drives, they came out running on first down, and those were stalled drives. There was second drive, I think had a sack. The first drive was one of those incompletions to Gronk that felt a little bit forced, even though the ball was there. But after that, I thought it was fine after those two drives. I can't explain those two drives, but you're also playing an elite defense. And I thought it was obvious that they wanted to establish everything on the ground, and they did it. I mean, for this team to go in there and bludgeon the Saints with two running backs, this is the number three run defense in the league, and they got the job done. They closed the game out on the ground. They were there on the ground all day long. Ronald Jones looked explosive, and Fournette was very consistent. I was fine with it. You know, I just didn't have a problem with it. Those first two drives looked ugly and got everybody looking at those numbers, but they clearly believed for some reason, and I don't know why. I give Arians a lot of credit, and Leftwich as well. They believed that they were going to be able to run the ball on the Saints, and they did.
You know, Lee, the one part that still worries me, and you, Lee, boy, their kick coverage is lousy. It's lousy. I don't care if it's a punt, a kick. They got a break with that shove in the back, Lee. I don't even think it affected the play. I don't think the Buck guy would have tackled Deontay Harris on that play, and it got called back. That really hurt the Saints. We know what happened on the punt. Mickens hit him. Lee, he hit him, and he bounced right off him. I mean, it was a fabulous play. And that's why the Saints, you know, are always top five special teams.
Fabulous play. Yeah. Wrap up. Open your arms and squeeze the guy. Don't let go. What the hell was that?
Well, he tried to make a big hit. He tried to make a big hit, Lee. You know,
that is the problem in the NFL in the 21st century. Dudes are trying to blow people up in part because they got the Lovie Smith disease. Oh, I got to force a turnover. Instead, if you just wrap a guy up, fundamentally tackle him, you're going to be much better off than trying to blow a guy up and missing, and he gains 35 or 40 yards. I mean, that just drives me out of my tree. I just go crazy when I see that. And I think I've said this once before on your podcast, Ira. I had never heard it before. I'd never heard it since. I mean, it was so out from left field. I don't know if it was a con job or tongue-in-cheek or what. Chris Collinsworth on Sunday Night Football at one point this year, I can't remember what game it was, you know, he was harping about guys not wrapping up, and he said the reason why guys don't want to wrap up is they expose themselves to shoulder injuries. I never heard that before. I'm not saying he's lying or anything, but, you know, one of these days I'm going to, you know, of course there's no combine this year, but next time I get a chance to talk to some suits, you know, I'm going to ask him. I said, well, I'd never heard this before. Is Collins with arms or something? And but that's the trouble with today's NFL. They're going for splash rather than boring fundamentals. And more often than not, you get burned during it. And by the way, after the Bucs' second punt, I was screaming at the TV, will you punt the ball out of bounds?
Lee, they don't do it. And I don't know why.
I know why. Because they're trying to get a turnover. And I'm not making it up. I've talked to coaches about that. They're trying to get a turnover. If they just do simple fundamental stuff, kick the ball out of bounds, punt the ball, I should say, out of bounds, you can't get the ball returned on you. It's impossible. Anyway.
And Steve, it's worth noting that if the field is treacherous Sunday, which it well might be, and the Packers are returning a pinion punt, Steve, you better be in your right lane. Because, you know, that could be an 80-yard punt return that could decide the game, especially on a field that you don't have good footing on. It's very important that you go and your coverage units have discipline, Steve, because I'll tell you what, and you've watched a lot of Packer games, Steve, at Lambeau in January. That team knows how to play in inclement weather. They know how to play. I don't know if it's the cleats they wear or whatever, Steve, so I think that's a disadvantage for any team going into Lambeau with bad weather is Green Bay's ability to adapt.
You punt the ball out of bounds, there's not going to be an 80-yard return. You don't have to
worry about it. It might shorten the punt. You know, all of a sudden, it's a 35-yard punt. I understand that, but it might be the way to go, Lee.
But you did say one word, Ira, that I think needs to be magnified. Please go out, every player on the Bucs roster. I don't care how cold it is. Please go out there the second you get to the stadium and start trying out cleats. Please, please, for the love of Joel Glazer, wear good cleats.
Sage,
outstanding, Steve.
Sage, yeah. Let me throw this at you, a little bit of an analogy. We saw how Devin White approached the game, like playing like a Tasmanian devil, like Lee said, just at a higher energy and a different plane than really everybody else around him. I felt that when Ronald Jones got the football, he was Devin White in an offensive uniform. He was so driven in that game, so jacked up, running so hard, doing all kinds of different things. And that run that he broke, I don't know where they found a holding penalty there. That was a terrible call. Arians even said it tonight on his radio show.
Which one? On Wirfs? Was it on Wirfs?
The one the one they called on Wirfs when Rojo broke it through on the left side.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, that was away from the ball as well, away from the run. I mean, this guy came out like an absolute madman. And Leonard Fournette, you know, he seems to avoid contact sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes there was at least three times in that game where it's clear that he wasn't LeGarrette Blount looking to mow over a defensive back. It's for some reason, Fournette, I don't know if he's thinking about his contract or what, but he didn't always run that way in his career. But he did have some good runs where he ran some people over. And who caught the most balls for the Bucs? Fournette, very reliable hands the last 2 weeks. And that's Tom Brady's offense, relying on the run game, throwing to the back for some key third downs. Very interesting. What do you think of the running backs?
I think Isbitz is making a remarkable point in this sense, Lee. It's hard to believe, and Lee, you and I were brutal on the guy, and he deserved it. But Lee, it's hard to believe that number 27 is the same guy we saw as a rookie. I mean, what a difference, Lee. What a difference. I mean, all year he's run with a frenzy, mm-hmm. in particular last night. He's had very few bad games, Lee. He doesn't get hit in the backfield anymore, which was a disaster in his rookie year. And we didn't know whether it was the line or him. And I think, in retrospect, he's got to take a lot of the heat for it. And disrespectfully, he doesn't hesitate anymore. Lee, there's no hesitation in Ronald Jones's game. And it's a wonder to see.
Yeah, you know, Rojo has done a great job resurrecting himself where it looked like he was an absolute bust. Obviously, the Bucs have coaching that have coached him up. And, you know, Steve pointed this out 3-4 years ago. And again, I'm a big Dirk Cutter guy. I like Dirk. Dirk was always good to me. He was always very fair with me. helped me out when I didn't even ask for help. And I have a high opinion of Dirk Cutter as just a human being. For whatever reason, he just doesn't develop running backs. I don't know why that is. I mean, just go look at his history. Well, I mentioned Dirk Cutter. I have to wonder if he's not going to call it a throw in the towel and call it the career. But at any rate, it's great for Rojo. Clearly, the coaching staff gave up on Rojo when he was a rookie. They gave up on him. And it says a lot about him, and it says a lot about the Bucks, the current Bucks coaching staff, as that they resurrected his career. And now he's easily, what, easily top 10 running back?
Steve, you know what the funny part about this Ronald Jones story is, among all the facets? He excels between the tackles. That wasn't the book on him coming out of Southern Cal. He was supposed to be an explosive big play guy that's going to take it 40 yards. Now, he did have a 99-yarder, Steve. We know that. But that's not his forte. Steve, he pounds between the tackles. He misses tackles. Steve, he's supposed to be change of pace, but he's not the guy that he was booked as coming out of Southern Cal, but there ain't a Buck fan in the world, Steve, that would trade him in right now.
Oh, he's tough between the tackles.
He's totally remade his body, so that's number one. He was drafted at 20 years old. 20 years old when they pulled the trigger on him in the draft, and when he got to camp, I think his birthday is in August or something. So really young player, considered very immature off the field. And so now we got a man. Now we got a man at running back instead of a kid, and it's a great thing to see. For like 5 yards a carry in the playoffs on the road against the Saints. He just keeps doing it, and he looks healthy, which is good. So, you know, hopefully they'll keep that quad warm and he can start terrorizing in Green Bay. Sage, Bruce Arians said something very interesting to Peter King after the game. They didn't let Tom Brady coach in New England. We let him coach. I sit back and just watch sometimes. It's a beautiful thing. He's coaching everybody up. And while it's a nice little shot at Belichick and all that, and it's fun on that front, and it's fun in that way, but it lets me think that, hey, you know what? Maybe the Bucks will get more out of Tom Brady than the Belichicks did, because you know, if he's gonna feel free to just sort of coach and talk to players and interact in a way and just sort of let loose all his knowledge, maybe they're getting a better version of Tom Brady here in Tampa.
Lee, there's no question in my mind that Brady feels liberated, absolutely liberated. Now, look, you can't argue with the success over two decades in Foxborough. Historic success, Lee. We'll never see it again. We'll never see that again between a coach and a quarterback. Six rings. Lee, 13 conference title games in New England? I mean, that's outrageous. But he's liberated, Lee. He's got clout. One of your favorite words, Mr. DeCampa. And when I heard that Arians quote that Steve said, I did chuckle about the little shot at Mr. Belichick. But more importantly, Lee, my reaction was, smart man, Bruce. You know, this thing about the players play and the coaches coach and you can't let the inmates run the asylum. Lee, we're talking about Tom Brady, Lee. Tom Brady, there ain't nobody like him. Maybe Peyton Manning in his heyday.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't think Peyton Manning ran that Colts offense? Are you nuts? Let's not be naive. You know, you think Clyde Christensen was telling Peyton Manning what to do? Come on. And Lee, it's working. It's working. They've won six in a row. They've molded this offense to what Brady wants. They've thrown out what he doesn't want. And Lee, you can't argue with the results, and I got no problem with Tom Brady having the biggest voice in the room. I don't.
Well, you know what? We got a taste of that almost immediately. Now, none of us knew that Belichick wouldn't let Brady give any tips to teammates. That sounds almost nuts to me, to be honest with you. I know Belichick is sort of a control freak, but not to that level. At any rate, one of the very first things we heard about Brady when there were actually organized practices at training camp was Brady kept telling the wide receivers, you got to keep pumping your arms, got to keep pumping your arms. And so that's been going on for quite a while. I think only a few fool would argue the Bucks are where they are right now because of Brady. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind. And it's not just the fact that he's like another coach on the field. Fournette wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Brady. Gronkowski wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Brady. I still maintain
Antonio Brown,
although he's had a limited impact on the team. Sue and JPP, I still maintain those two guys are not here if not for Brady. So he's just had such a massive impact on this team. By the way, number one, whatever happened to Brady and Arians don't get along. I don't know what happened to that. But the other is the amusing thing is, and this happened when Brady was still in New England. Who's the reason for the success? Is it Brady or Belichick? Now, I'm not stupid enough to suggest that Belichick's a bad coach, but look what happened to the Patriots without Brady. Look what happened to the downtrodden fire hydrant team in the NFC with Brady.
So, Ira, a little bit of news to turn our attention to. Lee mentioned Antonio Brown. He's got an MRI on his knee, and we don't know the results yet, but frankly, I really don't care. I'm really not concerned. It'd be nice to have him. He's a nice piece to have. I'm not discounting the guy's talent, but hopefully he's better, but I'm not worried after what we saw from Scotty Miller as well as
Tyler Johnson.
Johnson, and of course, Evans and Godwin are healthy, and I'm not concerned. But the other interesting thing is, back in November, Ira, I asked Bruce Arians at a news conference if Vita Vea could be available if he got deep in the playoffs, and he said he didn't really want to go there, but he said, yeah, it's possible, and now he's active, and he's going to practice this week, albeit not, they don't really hit each other this time of year. So obviously Vea is in no kind of football shape after breaking his leg or ankle, whatever it was, in October against the Bears at the end of that game, which was unfortunate. But this is exciting, Ira, because Vea could be ready if he comes back. I'm looking at him for the Super Bowl. I don't know what this guy could really be ready to do on Sunday, but with 3 weeks of practice, the Super Bowl could be a situation where he can contribute.
That's a great point, Steve. I wasn't even thinking about that Super Bowl. Lee, I think they're going to play him in very limited snaps, Lee.
I mean,
10 to 15 snaps, something like that. See what he can do. Will he impact this game? I don't think so. Although Green Bay's got a stout running game. It's stout. But I almost never worry about the Buck rushing defense. That's the last thing you and I ever worry about, especially when you're playing Aaron Rodgers. Green Bay runs the ball well. I mean, they got a three-headed backfield over there, and they're all good. But that's the last thing you think of when you're playing the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. I think Steve made a great point. Suppose he plays 10, 12 snaps, and then all of a sudden the Bucks win the game, and he's got a week off, and then 2 weeks to prepare.
Could be a factor in that game, and I'm not discounting he could be a factor at Green Bay. And this is why. The Bucks, the past 5 weeks, have had no pass rush. None. And, of course, some smart aleck on Joe Bucks fan Monday morning, like, ha-ha, they didn't get any sacks, and they still won. Yeah, let's set a goal to have no sacks against a freaking a Hall of Fame quarterback. That's real intelligent. JPP, I'm starting to think his knee's messed up. He's been invisible. Right now, Shaq is in a witness protection program somewhere. I don't know whatever happened to Shaq. I saw Shaq in the locker room. JPP was doing some social media broadcasting from the locker room, the jubilant locker room. And Shaq was there. Like, whoa, he's alive. I see him. And by the way, I love Shaq. But, man, we need you in the playoffs. That's why you're making the big money. Need you. So I think Vea could have an indirect impact in that Green Bay is going to have to account for him. Maybe that might free up Shaq. Maybe that might free up JPP.
Sage, a couple of key NFL things I wanted to hit you with that I think are important. But first, I want to remind everybody, as I mentioned earlier, big storm, clear water. What a place to watch the Bucks-Packers game. Excellent crowd out there last Sunday for the Saints game. It's just become a thing to do, sitting outside in the beautiful outdoor covered area. They got the heaters, they got the brand new setup, excellent TVs and the sound system and the Wi-Fi, and of course, indoors, Big Storm. You can watch at Odessa as well. Follow them on Facebook, Big Storm Odessa, Big Storm Clearwater, and even down at Cape Coral. But what a great setup for Bucks fans there. And Sage, I wanted to ask you two things. One, Chad Henne proved to be so incredibly valuable for the Chiefs in that game, walking in cold, making a couple of big plays to ice that game for Kansas City. You've brought that up before, Ira. The Bucks don't necessarily have that backup who can come in and get that done. And I believe this year, Todd Wright from Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast and the Toddcast was texting me something like 20 backup quarterbacks used in the playoffs this year, or something like that. Some sort of incredible number in total. And you know, and the other thing I wanted to mention to you, Ira, with the Saints, if this is the end for Drew Brees, Taysom Hill, he's due $12 million next year, which sort of lets you know that they're not going to pay Jameis Winston $25 million. Jameis would probably have to take a cheap deal so they can keep their quarterback pricing structure low and let him compete, or who knows how they would handle it. But what do you think would actually happen with the Saints at quarterback?
I think the plan is to keep both of them. Your point is right about Winston. Lee, nobody's giving Winston a lucrative contract. That's just not happening. Not now. Now, if he becomes the starter in New Orleans and has a big season, and if he signs a one-year deal with New Orleans, relatively cheap, he might be able to cash in after that, Lee. But in terms of his timing right now, he basically sat out the year. The last time we saw him, he was throwing pick after pick at the end of his Buck career. So he's hit rock bottom in terms of his professional career. And all he needs is an opportunity, and he might get it next year. I think Brees will retire. I didn't hear anything post-game that would lead me to think Jay Glazer got that wrong. So I think after the Super Bowl, you'll find out about Mr. Brees. And that ends an incredible, incredible 15-year run with Sean Payton. I mean, very magical. Lee, you got to give them credit. Every year they were a top five offense. Every year. And the receivers changed and the running backs changed. The O-line changed. What didn't change was the guy under center. So we'll see what happens. But I think there's a big shakeup coming in the Big Easy in the wake of Breeze's departure. There's no reason to think that Peyton's love affair with Taysom Hill is dissipated. I think it continues. I don't think the guy's a full-time quarterback, Lee. I don't.
No.
I think he's much more effective using him, 15, 20 snaps when he is really effective. He's so creative, Peyton. I mean, look at the gimmick play with Winston. I mean, that's a seven-point decision.
I'm not going to anoint Peyton as some offensive deity because the defense had head up the rear end. I'm sorry.
Well, what about what he's done for 15 years, DeKemper?
I never suggest that, but you introduced that all the guys are a borderline genius. Look what he did with Jameis. Look what he did with Jameis. Defense had their head up their rear end. I sniffed out plays more complex than that in high school.
He's very, very creative, Steve. Nobody can deny that. The way he used Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill would not be nearly as effective with 29 out of the other 31 teams. You never would have heard of Taysom Hill. This guy knows how to use his personnel. I mean, he just does.
Here's what I can say about Taysom Hill, and I think Ira, you and I might be on the same page with this. Taysom Hill is a glorified Tim Tebow wannabe. And as far as I'm concerned, if Sean Payton still has this love affair with Taysom Hill, knock yourself out. If I was a defensive coordinator, I would be blitzing my linebackers at SOB every snap. I would just go after him. So knock yourself out, Sean. You're smarter than everybody else in the room. Knock yourself out with Taysom Hill.
It's not like Taysom Hill is mold that you got to get rid of over there, Steve. It's not the same.
So you're wearing a Chad Henne jersey, Ira? Are you excited or you're just too numb by the Bucks' victory and all the ecstasy?
Stevie, let's not go crazy. He threw a horrible interception, Henne. I still don't know what the heck he was trying to do on that play. So let's not go crazy. He ran 14 yards on 3rd and 15, with those old legs of his. Give him credit. And then he threw a 3-yard pass to Hill, who was absolutely wide open. I'm not sure DeKemper couldn't have thrown that pass. Oh, I give Andy Reid more of the credit for going for it. That's the way the Chiefs play. That's the way Andy Reid coaches these days. And it's a beautiful thing. If you're a KC supporter, they got all the confidence in the world in their system. And even with Mahomes on the sideline, they went for it on fourth and one. Steve, they don't make that play. Cleveland's got the ball at midfield, down 5 points. Very gutsy call. I'll say this, Steve. Brass balls for Andy Reid. Brass balls.
All right, Sage, we are going to say thanks to Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, for all of their support of the podcast. Get to BillCurryFord.com. And we heard from our friends earlier at Florida's Elite Restoration. You know what to do. That is your first call if you see any kind of water or mold in your home, and they're who you want to use for any disaster 24/7. Get a free assessment of what's happening. And, of course, we love Big Storm beer that we drink nonstop. Keeps us in a good mood here at Joe Bucks Fan World Headquarters. Sage, we talked about the Hall of Fame in the last podcast. Anybody can go to check out the last episode from last week. At the end, Ira makes a great explanation of the process and Rondé Barber's chances versus Lynch and just the field a little bit. So go check that out. But we will let everyone know, Ira, that Tuesday the 19th, it is your big day. It's your presentation for Lynch, for Barber. We're wishing you the best of luck. It's the day everyone will vote. The finalist day. It's a unique format this year. I don't envy you, Ira. It's all on Zoom, which changes the dynamic and the whole thing. But we wish you luck, buddy. If there's anything you want to say, let the fans know. Otherwise, get us out of here with some sort of pearl of wisdom.
I will say this, and this is directed towards the Rondé Barber candidacy, and I'm very serious about this, Lee. When you study a guy's career, you're really boring. I mean, there were things about Barber in terms of his uniqueness, Lee. I was not even aware of it. I mean, everybody knows the 25-40 thing and the 200 consecutive games, the durability, but Lee, he had some stuff that is so unique for the position historically. I mean, historically. And I'll leave Buck fans with this. And I'm working with some historian. He's got no axe to grind. He's not a Bucks fan. And he researches these things. And he told me that Rondé Barber had 63 stuffs behind the line of scrimmage. That doesn't include the 28 sacks. Doesn't include it. 63 stuffs on running plays or little bubble screens or whatever, passes, 63. Ty Law had 8. Darrell Revis, 9. Charles Woodson, who also played a lot of safety, 38.5. Rondé Barber, 63. According to the historian, nobody in the history of the NFL as a defensive back has more than Rondé Barber. Nobody. Nobody.
That's really impressive, man. It's good research there, Ira. You know, that's almost as impressive as Steve Smith was with his prognostications on the playoffs.
What a clown. What a clown. Wow.